Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Globally Speaking podcast. I'm Vasagi Kodandapani, Senior Vice President of Strategic Accounts at AWS. I head the Train AI service line responsible for providing a range of AI data services, and I also manage multiple global accounts. To build AI applications, we need large amounts of data. Data scientists spend almost 80% of their time on prepping and managing data to build AI models. Why is AI training data important? The quality and quantity of training data sets are crucial to the accuracy and effectiveness of machine learning models. The more diverse and representative the data is, the better the AI model can generalize and perform on new unseen data. In today's podcast, let's talk about Train AI and how the services contribute to building industry-leading AI systems. Joining me today is Melanie Peterson, who is the Program Director for Train AI and will provide valuable insights on the services and her experience. Melanie, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us more about your career path and experience?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. So as you mentioned, my name is Melanie Peterson, and I am the Program Director for Train AI, which is a data services center of excellence for AWS. I've been working in this industry on both the client and vendor side for 10 years, and before that, I was part of the localization industry. So have been working very long in both areas. But with data services, I'm learning something new every day, which thrills me. It's constantly keeping me challenged. And I've had the ability to work on a lot of really amazing projects. I would say my first introduction to AI was working on a project with IBM Watson, starting in 2010, and actually continued through the run of Watson as a contestant on Jeopardy. That was really thrilling to me because, as you know, much of what we do is covered in confidentiality, but it's really exciting to turn on a show and say, see this computer? That's what I'm doing every day. And I had the ability to learn so much, spending almost a year traveling to New York, going to the IBM offices, and learning from some of the most brilliant data scientists in the world, frankly.
So Melanie, my first question for you: what sort of skills do you need to be working on AI training data projects?
That's such a great question, and one that I hear all the time, even outside of clients, but from families and friends who are really curious if they can do this type of work. And I would say we have all sorts of people from all backgrounds working on Train AI projects, but there isn't so much of a specific skill that you need, but a list of things that are really important to have to be successful. And I would say my top list here is attention to detail. When you're looking at this data, whether it's annotation, labeling, collection, the details matter and you have to be laser focused on what you're looking at. You need to be adaptable. I myself have found how adaptable we need to be just as leaders in this space, but even as someone who's working, you need to know that the client will always be changing what you're doing, and you can't be so regimented that you only want to do one specific task and never learn and do other pieces of it. You need to be highly collaborative, both with your project team, with the client. You need to be able to listen and understand what they're asking for and wanting to work together with a team. Time management is probably, next to attention to detail, the biggest one. We're constantly looking at averages and how quickly or slowly we're training the data. So you need to be able to do your tasks in the time allotted. And then just being a continuous learner. I myself am a continuous learner. I know most of us in this space are, but you're constantly going to receive feedback, not to take the feedback personally, to be able to learn from the feedback and apply it to whatever work you're doing.
That's awesome, Melanie. I understand that the complexity of your activities or the services could be different based on the type of projects you perform. Do you sometimes need any special skills to do a very complex task versus maybe a simple annotation or a labeling task?
Absolutely. We're starting to see this trend with the introduction of GenAI and the LLM models, where we need really specific domain expertise. So we've recently had projects that required us to use data scientists and calculus experts and even a rocket scientist. And on the flip side of that, we had the need for a chef. So that was pretty interesting. That is probably the newest thing that we've seen in the past year, with a really focused shift on domain expertise.
That's very interesting. I believe as you're supporting the build of AI applications, which is going to touch every facet of life, I think you would need representative skill sets of people who could come and work on these services, right? So that's quite interesting to know. So what is a typical training data task like? Can you give us some examples?
Absolutely. And just as we just talked about, I would say without a doubt, with the introduction of the LLM and GenAI models, we're seeing these training tasks change and evolve. But you know, I think the core favorites, as I would call them, are data collection, scraping mm-hmm. and collecting data, data creation, annotation and labeling. We're also doing a lot of audio recordings to listen to different voices and sentiment analysis and things like that. But a great example for, those of us that don't live and breathe this every day of annotation tasks is take, 1,000 images of a city street. We're going to be using boxes to highlight different features. For instance, this is a car. This is a tree. This is a human. This is a dog. So putting those boxes around the pictures to show the computer that every time they see this same image, the likelihood of that is it's a human or this is a dog. That's very simplistic, but I think it's a really good way for the average person who doesn't have to look at this every day like we do to understand what a data annotation task might be.
Sure. Thanks, Melanie. In fact, the example you gave is one of my favorites from the computer vision side of the house. Kind of building applications which can see and perceive like a human. So the annotation example you gave in terms of labeling or annotating the objects, features, it's going to make this system so much better. Thank you. So let me move on to the next question. What types of companies are asking for AI training data services?
Well, that's a loaded question because right now I would say everyone. It's I like to say that it's AI bingo right now. So everyone, it's the buzzword that everyone's talking about, and all the companies are really looking to engage because they don't want to be left behind, and they're trying to figure out what they can do that will help their business thrive, especially in an economy that we have right now. Everyone's looking for ways that they can optimize their spend. And so we're really seeing, of course, the big technology companies who will continue to be a driver in this space and bring the demand. But some of the most recent pivots that have been exciting for us is, working with the finance industry, as they're looking at AI to predict their market trends, to work with their customers on how to best approach their money. Healthcare obviously is going to be one of the biggest opportunities that we have to solve some very critical illnesses, but also how can they look at ways that they can handle patient care, diagnostics. And then, of course, you know, we have retail and e-commerce that's coming to us more and more to figure out how they can personalize their ads. You know, the ads we see every day come up as we scroll on our phones and and look at social media. So I would say it's really evolved since I first got involved, where it would just really heavily be just the tech companies, to all aspects of, you know, the clients we deal with every day at RWS.
Got it. I believe as AI is going mainstream, almost every industry, every organization is looking at creating an AI application or utilizing the training AI data services as you described it. My next question for you, what techniques and tools do you typically use for training data?
Yeah, so from the tools aspect, we have some internal tooling that we have developed specialized for our clients. And we also have a tool called Keely that we're using for a platform for any of our clients who do not have their own platforms. But from a technique standpoint, we're really a partner in helping to clean data, to augment the data, to create larger data sets. We're able to do some pre-annotation for our clients so that they can reduce their time to market for some of their data, and really being able to partner in those areas, I think, has made us a thought leader in this space. So constantly evolving and bringing new technologies to our clients is really important for us.
How do you get an AI training data project up and running? What would be the important steps that you have to utilize to create a project?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say we're a well-oiled machine at project initiation. So we're really starting by looking at the project and picking the best team. We have the ability to have really smart folks on the ground who are doing different projects. So identifying what project it is that we're working on, who's going to be the team with the most experience, and who are going to be the thought leaders to help our clients, improve whatever aspect of training they're doing. After that, we're obviously working to understand from the clients their exact requirements around quality, their end goals. And probably the most crucial point is ensuring they have well-written and thoughtful guidelines that we can hand to the resources that are working on our projects. I think after that, we're going to look at the initial data. What are they giving us? Do we need to augment any of that data with some collection or creation? What are we doing to build training for the community, whether it's e-learning or testing or any aspects to really help our resources be well-versed in the project they're doing? And then just continuing to deliver the work, iterate on the results, training and continuing to do our human in the loop iterative process to make sure that we're delivering as needed to the client.
Can you describe some common challenges that you encounter with AI training data? And are there any best practices that you apply so that you can avoid common pitfalls delivering these kind of projects?
Absolutely. I would say the two biggest ones right now that we're experiencing from our end is, insufficient or bad data. Mm-hmm. We need very large sets of data that is also sourced ethically and is correct for the project that we're trying to do. Part of that ethical piece is the data privacy issues, which I would say would be some of the other common challenges. It's important to be a partner with these end clients so that they understand that neglecting data privacy is going to be a huge pitfall for them. Anywhere from GDPR to the new regulations that have been set out by the White House just this month, ignoring these strict guidelines, they're putting their business at risk for lawsuits, for fines from the government. And then you're also putting yourself at risk for potentially exposing all of your real data of everyday users like you and me out in the World Wide Web. The other pitfalls we see are, and one that we're really active with working on our clients with, is neglecting, the continuous monitoring and training of the resources. We really like to push for the calibration meetings, weekly calibration meetings, so that we can show what we're seeing in the data, what our resources are reporting back, and how they can change some of the aspects of how their model is working to create more effective data. And then I would say, you asked about this earlier, and we're really pushing this lately because we're seeing just failing to use domain experts is going to be a pitfall. And we've seen the real benefit of using experts in smaller quantities rather than the wrong resources, at a very large scale.
My next question to you, Melanie, is around Gen AI. I think you obviously mentioned about LLMs and how Gen AI has taken the world by storm. Can you talk about any interesting projects that you have supported in this space?
We are supporting several right now, and one has been very interesting for us because it's allowed us to really focus on, new training techniques around prompt engineering, the QAing of prompts, red teaming, which I think is probably the word of the week in AI bingo. We're doing a lot of QA of the prompts and the answers that another vendor has done. And you can see in some of those answers that there's bias introduced. So anytime mm-hmm. we see an answer that's full of clearly someone's personal opinions, we have to flag that and rewrite it. And that's where the guidelines come into play, because we don't want to just allow it to, I think when ChatGPT first came out, for instance, when people were testing it, you saw all these things come out where political opinions were inserted, or racist opinions were inserted, which was horrifying, because you don't want your children to see that. So that's where a lot of this red teaming is coming in right now, and rewriting these prompts and being very vigilant about the QA of these prompts, and really focusing using our huge RWS community on those domain experts, assigning different experts to different pieces of the Gen AI is allowing us to see a substantial increase in quality. And then, just evolving on that, learning from our clients' results, learning from our own QA efforts, how we can continuously help our client in this space and offer new services, because they're changing every day. They're going to continue to change every day, and we need to be ahead of what our clients need so that we can continue to be a valued partner for them.
Very good. Next question for you. Is there a particular example of a challenging problem or a situation you encountered while delivering some of these large AI training data programs? If you could quote one or two of them, and also talk about any lessons learned from that experience.
Yes, the one that's top of mind is just because I was talking about it yesterday. As I'm always learning and evolving, and we see different projects. But I would say one of the most challenging projects I ever had to deal with as a leader was a project that involved rating and labeling of Western-style women's clothing using resources in APAC. 80% of them were male. So immediately red flags, you know, go up when you hear, how do you become successful when you have to overcome cultural challenges by using mass over domain expertise at a smaller scale? So, you know, as you constantly go through the testing efforts, you're thinking of ways that you can overcome that. So some of the ways that we did that were like a rigorous pre-testing. We wanted to see if these resources had any knowledge of Western culture. And from there, put them into training modules, help to, you know, educate people that don't have that everyday knowledge, because, you know, why would they? Their culture is completely different when it comes to what they would wear to weddings, what we would wear to weddings, and really just helping to train that knowledge. And then we finally decided to go back to the client and ask if we could use smaller sampling in different locations to see if we could achieve similar results, or actually better results, with these smaller specialized skill sets. So it's really important, like as I look through new projects that we get, current projects, to not just think you have all the answers at the start, like work through these pitfalls, work through these challenges, understand that not everything is super easy and clear and we can do it, but how can we adapt to the request? How can we make the most out of it? And how can we be thought leaders to our clients? But that one was really challenging. It kept me up at night, I would have to say. But you know, we delivered in the end, and it's one that I'm always thinking about as we get new requests.
No, that's a great example, Melanie. In fact, while you were describing the challenge as well as how you solved for it, you kind of summarized almost all the topics we discussed, right? In terms of finding the right skill set to work on the problem, identifying candidates with the right cultural nuances so that you don't build a system with the wrong cultural context, for example. You also touched upon the right training and qualification, using the right process to test and make sure that the product is delivered. So that was a nice summary, I would say. So moving on to my last question, rather an important one. I know that we are in the era of, AI governance and a lot of regulations around putting guidelines on how an AI system is built. So my question to you is, what is your approach to handling bias and fairness in training data? How do you ensure that the models you train are ethically sound and avoid reinforcing existing biases?
This is really a hot topic right now, as you know, and one that, that we internally spend a lot of cycles thinking about. The way that we are approaching this currently and, you know, always evolving is starting at the guidelines. We are able to help not introduce bias by keeping very specific, very structured guidelines, because we want all of our resources using the exact same methodology in their work. The more stringent your guidelines are, the less room for introduction of their own bias and skewing results. So we've been able to work with our clients in a lot of these aspects to make sure that we're seeing these guidelines, we're tightening these guidelines as we see any skewing of the data from particular resources. The other thing that I would say is that we try to use people from all aspects in any of the projects. So if we're sourcing for the United States, we don't want to use just people from Alaska or just people from Florida. We want to introduce as many people in the locale as possible so that you're not skewing any of your data to just one place or one type of mindset.
Very good. I think it's such an important aspect of building the teams itself, right? One of the use cases which is close to my heart is use cases for accessibility. I believe the bias and fairness aspects or reinforced force use cases, because you are looking at a special group of candidates. And I think the process and practices you mentioned would be so relevant when you're building something which constantly needs to be tested for fairness. Well, thank you, Melanie, for this interesting conversation and sharing your insights. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. See you next time for another episode about AI.